Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times bestselling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
Hello, everyone. I'm Kevin Cruz. Welcome to the LeadX Leadership Show, where we help you to become the boss everyone wants to work for. Today on the show, you're going to hear from a successful life science executive who says women need to encourage each other, not compete with each other, and how a special object on her desk reminds her of her daily priorities. And there's lots of other good advice, not just for women. But first, if you want the managers in your company to truly engage their team members, you have to check out LeadX with Coach Amanda, the world's first training and coaching platform built with IBM Watson. Managers who use the LeadX training platform report higher levels of managerial confidence, productivity, and behaviors that drive engagement. Visit leadx.org and sign up for a demo. Our quote of the day comes from Joseph Addison. The grand essentials to happiness in this life are something to do, something to love, and something to hope for. Our guest today has over 30 years in the biopharmaceutical and healthcare industries and is currently CEO of PureThread Technologies. She's the co-founder of Habergen, a boutique management consulting firm, and co-author of Remember Who You Are, Achieve Success, Create Balance, Experience Fulfillment. Our guest is Lisa T. Grimes. Lisa, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Kevin. Glad to be here.
I'm excited to have you on. And again, I mentioned in the bio, you know, your new book is Remember Who You Are, Achieve Success, Create Balance, Experience Fulfillment. That's a lot, but what's sort of the big idea of the book?
The big idea is really twofold. One, it started with complimenting other women beats competing with other women. And it really broadened from that. I co-wrote the book with Paula Brown Stafford, and together we have 65 years, met as fierce competitors, determined we did not like each other at all, and over time grew to be very good friends and realized life was a lot more fun when we could encourage one another and support one another. And that turned into what started the book that took us about a decade to actually write, because we both were working full time and were mothers. And long story short, we wanted to encourage people not to feel like they're an island of one. And, you know, the stories in our book, as you have seen, there's nothing earth shattering in there, but we share a lot of personal stories and have had so many comments of, oh, I've had something like that happen to me. I can relate. And hopefully that is really what it will do, is to help people see that we all share similar experiences. If we're willing to be vulnerable and we're willing to learn from our mistakes, then we can help others along. And then lastly, our editor was a male, and he said, you ladies are crazy if you think this book is only for women. So we have a his foreword and a her foreword, because we also think it gives a little insight for men to better understand women in the workforce.
Yeah, I found that to be the case. I thought it was great. But this is an incredible backstory. So you and Paula met roughly how many years ago?
2002.
And where were you both working at the time? What were your roles?
We were both heads of global business development for the two largest drug development firms, for Quintiles and PPD. So we were truly going after the same multi-million dollar contracts.
Right. So when you talk about being competitors, it wasn't that you were in the same company and like kind of rivaling. You were literally corporate competitors and probably even bumped into each other coming and going on big pitches or something.
We first met in the lobby of a major pharma company in New Jersey.
I've had that happen many times myself, so I can relate. And so it's natural for you to see each other as rivals. And you said at first you really didn't like each other, didn't view each other as partners.
You know, Kevin, we didn't. We viewed each other literally as fierce rivals. Paula's a biostatistician by training. She was smart. She knew her business. I didn't want to go up against her when I was competing for business. And it was a gentleman that Alan that knew both of us. And Alan continued to say, Lisa, you need to meet Paula. You'll really like her. And I'm like, no, thanks. I know Paula. And he was doing the same thing to her. And That's she great. Was like, no way. I don't want to meet her. And finally, one day he came to me 2 years later and he said, please just meet Paula. And wow. I said, if you promise to never mention her name to me again, I'll meet her.
Yeah.
And we agreed to go to lunch, Kevin, and then he didn't show up. So there she and I sat.
And I think he planned that all along.
Oh, I think he did too. He's a smart guy. And we found that the stories we shared, we could complete each other's sentences, that we shared a lot of things. And we certainly didn't divulge any competitive intelligence, but there was a bond. And then we quickly realized a point that you mentioned earlier. How often is that competitiveness geared toward people within your own company?
Right.
I mean, we should have been competitors. We were going against each other's companies, but we just found what we felt toward each other. We found inside the companies where we were working, and that's not the way it should be.
Yeah, I think this is great. And again, I want to stress your point that like this is great advice, not just for women, but for anybody. And you know, my early companies were focused on pharmaceutical training as on the supplier side. So similar backgrounds. And at the annual Life Science Trainers and Educators Network meeting, before all of us vendors would go and compete, I would hold a cocktail party and just invite all of my competitors in. And we found like, yeah, we're going up against each other on deals, but the pie was getting bigger year after year. And we had more to gain by, and so much in common that, you know, we could talk not about, you know, competitive things like pricing or anything, of course not, but just sort of industry things. You know, what are you seeing in the industry? What's going on? How are you doing? I mean, it was, and that group still to this day remains pretty close. It's just friendly rivals. You know, it's not vicious like it used to be. So the first section of your book is about how to achieve success. And so just what are some of the tips that you offer in the first part of the book?
Each part of the book is divided into three chapters. And the success part, Kevin, the first chapter is around building your brand. And we started with that because, you know, we're all familiar with brands of corporations. We're familiar with the brands of the clothing we like. Mm-hmm. But we have found when you ask people, what's your personal brand? We sometimes get the deer in the headlight look, or I don't know, or how do you help me figure that out? And so we really give some, you know, tips and suggestions of if you don't know what your personal brand is, ask some people, right. Ask some trusted advisors, not just for the good parts, but maybe the not so good parts. You know, I was certainly told that I was very intimidating, and that wasn't a word I wanted to hear. And I wasn't trying to be intimidating, but I am highly competitive. Right. I like to achieve the goal I set out to achieve, but I needed to hear that feedback early on to realize how important it was for me to make sure I was pulling my team along with me and I wasn't just racing off to the goal.
Right.
So tips like that, you know, if you determine that integrity is part of your brand early on, when you have someone to say, well, let's just fudge this a little bit. Well, your answer's already made because integrity is part of your brand. So you don't have to sit there and struggle with what am I going to do here? So we just find that it helps. And, you know, it was interesting. We both had kind of a fun side of our brand. Mine was hot sauce. And so wherever I went in the world, I would have hot sauces waiting for me or shipped to me. Paula's was a little more tasty. It was Krispy Kreme donuts.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, you kind of have something that becomes your signature and people remember that. Then we also talk about delivering X plus, and that's really just never letting the words, this is not my job, come out of your mouth. It's how can I go above and beyond and really deliver more than I'm asked? And, you know, we then get into, well, what if I'm not getting paid for that? Well, you can work toward that, and we discuss that as well. But just doing that little bit extra whenever you're asked. And then the third chapter focuses on leading with authenticity. Mm. And that's really at the heart of the book is, you know what? I can never be Kevin Cruz. And I'm not going to be even a half version. I can never be Paula, my co-author.
Right.
But I can be the best Lisa And so if I am authentic to how I'm wired and learn and continue to improve the strengths that I have, then I'm going to be the best me. And so a lot of leading with authenticity focuses around building confidence mm-hmm. in who you are and bringing your whole self to the table.
That's great. Of course, you say it's not only about achievement. How do we create balance? And as you said, you know, this can be tough, especially if we are, you know, working around the clock, so to speak, as an entrepreneur or a hard charging executive. Many of us, you know, I'm a single dad with three kids, you know, dual income households. It seems like it's getting tougher and tougher. What are some tips to get us back to that place of balance?
You know, great question. And that's our most frequently asked question, actually. And we both are moms of two and we're in dual career households and all of that, both empty nesters at this point. So we've survived it.
Congratulations.
But, yeah, thanks. I think the best analogy I could come up with, Kevin, is it's balance is kind of like a juggling act. And if I could sit here and juggle for you and your listeners, you'd see all the different balls I was trying to keep in the air. And sometimes there are many because there is our family. There's our career. There's our health. If we want some level of exercise, there's our faith. There's our friends, eating healthy. I mean, the list goes on and on. And it's really a matter of prioritizing. And so I always keep, and I think I had shared this with you when we spoke earlier, but I keep a little crystal heart on my desk, and it's my reminder of my priorities. My number one priority is my faith and my family. And if I filter my daily decisions remembering my top priority, then I'm going to have much more balance. And then kind of my next ball that I'm juggling is a glass heart, if you will. So it's still a heart, is still breakable, but it's not as valuable as the crystal heart that I keep on my desk. And that's my career. I put a lot of effort into growing my career and continuously learning and helping others and to achieve. And then we have all sorts of rubber balls, the things that sometimes we can just get wrapped up in. We got to do this, or we got to go make sure we've got birthday cakes delivered right. to the school that were homemade or bought right. from this special deli. And you know what? Maybe we can zip down the street to Costco and pick up a great cake and deliver it and everybody's happy. Mm-hmm. Or we want to have a dinner party, but we somehow think it's got to be gourmet when ordering pizza is fine. Right. And then finally, I would say we all can wind up spending, at least the people we talk to, a lot of times on lead balls. And I usually use a rock to visualize the things that can waste our time, like comparison.
Right.
Comparison, you know, is only going to lead to despair. I mean, it doesn't mean we don't look at things and think, well, I'd like to get better, but comparison is the opposite of contentment, or guilt and feeling guilty. And we have seen this, and studies have shown particularly women tend to feel guilty and apologize, like, oh, I'm really sorry it's raining today. Well, we don't control that, you know, but just coming up with things. Well, I have to make a choice, a real big client presentation or missing my kid's soccer game. Well, maybe I've been to six of my kid's soccer games and I really have to go to this mm-hmm. presentation. But on the other hand, maybe it's my kid's graduation and I'm going to miss the client meeting to do that. And so I could go on and on. But the point is, if we could drop those lead balls and let them sit on the ground, we'll find a lot more minutes in our day. So it takes us kind of back full circle to filtering through our top priorities. And I think that that's the answer to finding balance, and it's different for each of us.
Yeah, so much good stuff there, Lisa. And for our listeners, I want to just underscore a couple of things. I mean, first of all, this idea that you have a physical object on your desk to remind you of what's important. And I'd shared, I've got something taped on my monitor. And just this idea of, because we will forget in the busyness, like to have something in our environment to anchor us. And what I also loved is you talked about being very clear on your priorities, you know, faith and family. And having written a time management book, every day I get questions about, how do I do it all? And they give a list of 5,000 things that they want to do every day. And I say, you can't have it all. We have the same number of minutes, 1,440. The key is to be really clear on your priorities, on your, I say, on your values. So for me, it's my three to thrive: health, wealth, and relationships. And every morning I'm thinking about what does a good day look like in those areas? And those are the things that I'm a big calendar freak, not a to-do list. So that I'm going to calendar time to take care of. And then there's the secondary things and the third things. And so the way that you're so focused on like, okay, I know exactly my number one and two and career is three. And sometimes there is no four, but that's okay. That's okay. Just being thoughtful about it and accepting it. And then like the stress can kind of come down a little bit because we're not trying to do 5,000 things at once.
Well, right. And I think your point to calendar it, I am a big to-do list person, but I have learned, and we talk about this also in Remember Who You Are, is I have a to-do list and I know what I need to, I have a to-do list for what I'm doing the rest of this day, but I calendar things that I don't need to do today. And maybe I don't even need to do this week, but I don't want to forget. Yeah. And so I think that's also a good point. And when you talk about calendaring it, it's putting it in the right perspective. You know, maybe I do need to take care of Thanksgiving lunch, right, but that's 6 weeks away. So I don't need to carry it around just so I can check it off right now. You know, so putting them out there and then glancing at it so that you can adjust.
You just reminded me right before we went on the air here, my sister texted and asked me if I would do Thanksgiving this year. And I did not put a note or put it on my calendar. So now I'm going to have to go and do that. You know, you got me going on that one. So last, let's just speak for a couple minutes about this idea of fulfillment. And I know I experienced as an entrepreneur, after I had achieved what I thought was success, I sort of felt a little empty and realized success is a little different than significance. And I had to work that out over a few years myself. What's the advice you're sharing on this topic of fulfillment?
You know, we all are wired for a sense of purpose. And often when we do achieve a high level of success, I think you're not the only one that is like, oh, maybe this isn't exactly all that I thought it was going to be. And I think when we can figure out that our purpose is greater than like achieving, oh, I don't know, an IPO or achieving right, the sale of a company or achieving whatever it is that's a business goal, is giving back. And giving back can take on so many forms. It could be mentoring. It could be being polite to the person at the grocery store that's checking you out. It could be working in a charitable organization. I think one of the things that has always stood out to me, Kevin, is a cancer charity that I work with. We grant wishes. It's sort of like Make-A-Wish, but, yeah, but it's for cancer patients over 18. And the very first wish we ever gave was to a mother who had never taken any of her children on a vacation. And we sent Yolanda and her three kids on a vacation. She passed away a few months after that. But to this day, 4 years later, her children, who are below the poverty yeah, level of income in America, have started selling T-shirts and send checks for every penny incredible, they make from those T-shirts back because of the impact of the memory yeah, of what they did there. And so that's just one example. There are so many different ways to give back. But, you know, we're each one step ahead of someone in some area of our life.
That's right.
And if we could just see that and help pull them along and they help pull somebody else along, because we have people that have done that for us. But again, it's a conscious effort to get up. People, I think like we are, can get up and it's like, all right, this is what I'm going to get done today. And it's like taking the time to reflect, is there somebody that I can make a difference in their life today? And then doing that thing, sometimes maybe seemingly insignificant, but just taking the time to do it.
It's an incredible and moving story and a great reminder. You know, I often say life isn't about making an income, it's about making an impact. And I think your point is great, that no matter where you are better off than someone else and have something to offer to someone else. It doesn't have to be money. You know, there's lots of ways to make an impact, lots of ways to help. So that is a great place to wrap this up. So Lisa, how can our listeners find out more about your book, Remember Who You Are, and about your work?
Well, our book, Remember Who You Are, is available really any place you can buy books, so online or bookstores. And we also have a website. It's www.haberjahn.com, and I will spell that because it's a little tricky. It's HABERGEON.
That's great. And we will put links to Haberjahn, and we'll drop an Amazon link to the book into the show notes so everybody can click and find them online as well if they're driving as they're listening to this and not jotting it down. Lisa, thank you so much for coming on to the LeadX show.
Thanks, Kevin. I enjoyed our conversation.
Friends, if you like this episode of the LeadX Leadership Podcast, please take a minute, leave a rating on iTunes or Stitcher. Ratings are invaluable for attracting new listeners. And I like to convert those listeners into leaders because, you know, I'm on a mission to spark 100 million leaders in the next 10 years. And if you want to become the boss everyone fights to work for and nobody wants to leave, check out the LeadX platform with Coach Amanda at leadx.org. And if you have 10 or more managers who could use some binge-worthy training, send me an email at info@leadx.org, LEADX.org, and we'll talk about getting you set up with a totally free pilot for those managers. See if they like it. If they don't, that's fine. We go away. Part as friends. But if they love it, you've just found yourself a new resource for them. Remember, leadership is influence. You're always leading. How are you going to lead today?